Okay, well, the purpose of life is to work hard, get lots of money, be rich, be successful, have lots of girlfriends, drink a lot of beer, and that's it. So let's get on with it. Why waste any time? What are you wasting your time for? Going to a temple? What are you going to get at a temple? You don't need free food handouts. That's all you get at a temple. It's below your dignity to go and get the free food handouts. You should be working, study hard so you can enjoy later. Someone told me, there's one young boy studying in Bombay, there was some industrialist from England, Indian, had come there, he was giving a lecture, he was screaming in the microphone like this, work hard, be a success. Was it some industrialist from England? I can't remember his name. So, well, most people seem to think like that, isn't it? Judging by the way people live their lives, most people think that the purpose of life is like that. Get lots of money, be a successful slave of some company, and that's it. I suppose you're different. You're coming here. Because, why? You're not satisfied with that. Most people don't even think about what the purpose of life is, but they just presume that the way we're programmed to lead the life, that's what we should do. Everyone just goes along with it. They don't know anything better. They never think about anything better. And they lead their lives like that. Most people, isn't it amazing? Most people don't even think that, is there a purpose to life or what it is? They just go along like blind sheep. And they become very proud if they get it. You see, what is some advertisement? What is that? That NIIT has some advertisement that I want to graduate into a five-figure salary. So, and they want to get your money so that you come and you'll come and study with them with the idea that you'll earn more money. But most people never question it. Well, is there anything more to life? Is there actually any purpose to life? This shows that for all their so-called advancement, modern man or modern human beings are actually, in terms of level of consciousness, not higher than the animals. As Srila Prabhupada used to say, you're very proud of your civilization, but what are you doing? The dog is running on four legs and you are running on four wheels. But what is the difference? The dog is looking for Ahara Nidra Bhayamaitum. The dog is interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And the human society, for all its big buildings, big multinational corporations, big stadiums, and Nobel Prizes, and universities, everyone's life works out to Ahara Nidra Bhayamaitum. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and having sex. And sometimes they write poetry about it, or they write novels about it, or they make sociological or psychological studies about it, and think that this is very advanced. But actually, it's just on the animal level. Human life begins Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now we have attained the human form of life, we should inquire into spiritual reality. What is the actual purpose? The animal does not perceive, he doesn't have a thought out manner of thinking to perceive that I am suffering. He is not a philosopher. The animal is not a philosopher. If he suffers, he tries to make some antidote to the suffering in a very simple way. He's hungry, he tries to get some food. He's cold, he tries to find some warm place to sleep. Too hot, he goes in the shade. Human being should be intelligent enough to think that I am suffering, why? What is the purpose of life? Now, some people will say that, well, there is no purpose to life. They, when faced with the question, what is the purpose of life, they say that there is no purpose. This is foolish. It is foolish to say that there is no purpose when everything we do is with a purpose. We eat, why? With a purpose, because we feel hungry and we think if I don't eat that then I'll become weak and sick. We go to school, we may not understand the purpose, but our parents understand, they send us to school with the idea that if you don't get educated, then your future will not be so bright. Everything is done with a purpose. So if we say that overall there is no purpose in life, that's meaningless. It's not a very intelligent conclusion. We see the whole universe is going on with tremendous order, isn't it? Science means the study of the order within the universe. If there was no order, then there would be no science. If everything was totally random, then there'd be no science. You couldn't make any scientific law. No one makes scientific laws. You couldn't observe them. And you couldn't isolate them. You couldn't describe them unless there was some fixed order. That there is fixed order, design, it suggests there is a design, some purpose. There's a story, I don't know if it's true or not, but the story goes like this, that Isaac Newton, he was a theist, and he had quite a few friends who were atheists, scientists. So Isaac Newton had constructed a model of the universe as it was known at that time, which was quite advanced for that time. You turned a wheel and then all the different parts of the universe, all the different planets and stars would move. A mini unit, a model, that's the word, it's a model of the universe. And one day one of his atheistic friends came to visit him and saw this model of the universe and said, well, that looks quite good. And Isaac said, hey, have a look at this. And he turned it and moved. And he was very impressed. That was, you know, state-of-the-art technology at the time. So he said, wow, that's really good. All credit to you for making that. He said, well, I didn't make it. Isaac Newton said, I didn't make it. He said, well, who made it? He said, well, no one made it. What do you mean, no one made it? No, no one made it. It's just there, that's all. One day I came in my study and it was just there. Someone must have made it. Even if someone brought it in secretly, or someone must have made it. He said, no, I don't think so. I don't think anyone made it. It's just happened, that's all. You know, by chance. I didn't clean up the room for some days, and then one day I left the window open and then all the garbage blew together. And it's there like that. He said, oh, come on, you know, we're scientists. Why are you talking all this childish talk? He said, then Isaac said, really? You're a scientist? Then why are you talking such childish talk? You don't believe this little model of the universe could come into being by chance. But you're such a damn fool, you say the whole real universe comes into being without any God in control, without chance. Who's the fool? You or me? You. So the universe, anyone who thinks it comes into being by chance, is a fool. It's obviously, if we can study it and find the laws, and even though the scientists, the biggest brains in this universe, or they think they're the biggest brains, that's the problem, they think they're the biggest brains, they don't realize that the biggest brain is the one who made it. But they're studying it for so many generations, and they've found so many different laws, and still, from the microcosm to the macrocosm and everything else in between, they're still at the level which Isaac Newton said, he was considered the greatest genius of his time, but he said that while exploring the realms of knowledge, I feel like a wanderer on a vast sandy beach who has picked up a few grains of sand, and that is the extent of my knowledge compared to all the vast knowledge. I really don't know very much at all. He was honest enough to say so. So scientists have learned a lot more since the times of Sir Isaac, but still the beach is much bigger than that which they know. But this much we should be intelligent enough to accept is that if there is so much order, then there should be a designer. And if there's a designer, he should have designed it with some purpose. It makes sense, doesn't it? We have annually, in many countries, they have the inventors competition, inventor of the year, and they invent all kinds of things. So someone could submit an invention, some new machine. You press the button and the light starts flashing, and then something pops up and then it makes it some noise. And you say, oh, that looks very good. What does it do? Doesn't do anything, it's just a machine, that's all. But what's the purpose? There's no purpose. I just designed it and it's a machine. So you're not going to win the prize, are you? No one's going to purchase such a machine that has no purpose. You don't go to the trouble of designing something with no purpose. So first of all, if you say that the universe, it's very, very finely tuned, extremely complex system, but there's no, it just happened by chance, that's foolishness number one. And to say that there's no purpose behind the universe, that is a concomitant foolishness. This is why people, this purpose of life, most people don't think about it. They just think, yeah, eat, drink, sleep, be merry and enjoy, because tomorrow we'll all be dead, and when we're dead, then everything's finished. People don't really think about it, but they just, people, by their actions, we can understand that people think that the purpose of life is like that. You know, get money, get a job, go to America, and, you know, have what they call a successful career. Enjoy yourself, which means, you know, have a lot of sex like an animal and drink lots of things which poison your body. Intoxicant. Intoxicant. This beer and whiskey and all, they're intoxicants. Intoxicant means it's toxic. Means it's poisonous. Anyway, people, they think they're intelligent, but they're just drinking and boozing and partying because they're it's advertised that you should do like this. They don't think about it. Why should I do it? They don't. No one feels happy by doing it, but the propaganda is there, and people are. They think they're intelligent because they have a university degree, but actually they're not intelligent at all because they never think what is the purpose of life. They never even think if there is a purpose. So, congratulations. This meeting is for people whose real intelligence has begun to awaken, and who, despite all the razzmatazz of modern life, of working hard and getting lots of money and spending lots of money and acting like a sophisticated fool, that there are people who have enough real intelligence to consider that beyond all this frantic way of life, there may be some higher purpose. So let's discuss that. What is the purpose of life? This is the proper question to ask. Anyone who doesn't even ask this question is living like an animal. Only a human being can ask this question. What is the purpose of life? To ask this question is a sign of real intelligence, and it's a sign of real intelligence also not to be satisfied with a wrong or an incomplete answer. There are many people who are anxious to tell you what is the purpose of life. Like you're saying, most people are they're programmed, work hard, get lots of money, drink Coca-Cola, drink beer, party, have lots of girlfriends. Why do they think like that? Because people are telling, do this, do it through the mass media. Then when you join some company, someone was telling me he joined some airline company, and then they took them to Bombay for training, and the main thing seemed to be to make them to want to initiate them into boozing and womanizing. That seemed to be the main purpose, because if you get people to booze and womanize, then you can manipulate them very easily. That's why it's promoted so much in the modern age. Then you can just get people to work hard without thinking, because they work and work, and then they booze and they... Anyway, I don't know what the slang words are here, but, you know, something with a woman. And you do that, and then all your intelligence goes, actually. You become a prime fool. So, one should be intelligent enough also to find the right answer. There are plenty of people who will tell you what the purpose of life is, but most of them don't have any real idea at all. Or they have an incomplete or imperfect idea. So what is the purpose of life? One time I was present in a darshan with Srila Prabhupada, the founder of this society. Great devotee. We don't know how great he is. He's so great. Anyway, I was sitting in a darshan. It was actually an interview with a journalist of the London Broadcasting Corporation, some radio company. So he asked Srila Prabhupada this question: what is the purpose of life? Now, most journalists aren't intelligent enough to ask such an important question. They just ask stupid questions like, why are you dressed in clothes like that? And why don't you do ordinary jobs? And just stupid questions. But he was a very good journalist, and he very humbly and submissively asked from Srila Prabhupada, what is the purpose of life? And I was pretty sure that Prabhupada is going to answer, the purpose of life is to understand God, or the purpose of life is to perform austerity. I thought Prabhupada would answer with one of these two answers. But Prabhupada answered unpredictably. He said, the purpose of life is to enjoy. I was surprised. Probably everyone else in the room was surprised too. Srila Prabhupada went on to explain that as living beings, we are not inanimate objects. As living beings, as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, who is by nature full of bliss, it is the nature of the jiva to want to be happy. It's a natural thing. But Prabhupada explained that we are trying to be happy within this material atmosphere, separate from Krishna, the supreme bliss, the supreme blissful person. It is not possible to be happy in this material situation. Srila Prabhupada explained that. So, actually it's a fact. If we analyze, everything we do has a purpose, and even if we don't think about it philosophically, everything we do because we think it will benefit us. Isn't it? Everything we do. We drink a Coca-Cola, or some people drink, I don't drink Coca-Cola. We drink, just as an example, we can say, we drink Coca-Cola. Why? Because we saw some stupid advertisement in which they portray people being happy drinking Coca-Cola. So we think, I will be happy just by drinking Coca-Cola. We drink it because we think, or they show young, healthy, good-looking people, and you think, I want to be like that. Or they show some cricket player, and you think, well, I want to be like him. So you drink. You think, this will make me happy. We don't think all of that. We don't go through a big philosophical analysis in our minds. But the idea is then that we shall be happy by drinking Coca-Cola, so I shall do so. And everything we do for the sake of happiness. Even if we help others, we do so because we think that I will feel good about myself, other people will praise me, and I will get some punya, so in a future life I will get good karma. Or there are books like How to Win Friends and Influence People and The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, in which more or less the idea is that I scratch your back and you scratch mine. You help others and they'll help you. So you will benefit. Always, whatever we do with a purpose. The purpose of enjoying. Enjoying means we will enjoy our senses and we shall try to avoid those things which impede our enjoyment. Just like we feel hot, we turn on, so that's uncomfortable, turn on the fan. We don't think about it, we don't go through a big philosophical thought. I'm hot, I don't want to be hot, I will turn on the fan. We don't think we turn it on like that. But we do it even without thinking because we think that will benefit me. But an intelligent person, he analyzes and sees that whatever we try to do within the material atmosphere, we're only doing it for the sake of happiness, but we don't become happy. The result is unhappiness, we have to suffer janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukh, we have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik klesh. We suffer because of our own bodies. If there are so many diseases that we suffer, and we suffer mentally due to anxiety or depression or lust. Lust is also suffering. People think that lust is enjoyment, but actually, as Lord Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, duṣparena analeja, it actually burns the heart. There's an actual feeling of burning. It's actually an unpleasant feeling. But we have the idea that if I indulge my lust by sexual activity, that will make me happy. But that's another illusion. It doesn't make us happy. So we think that, adhyatmik, then adhibhautik klesh means that other living beings also give us trouble. Other human beings give us trouble in various ways. And even there are tiny little insects, bed bugs, or they're in the chair, little bug, tiny little thing. But if it bites you, it hurts like anything, doesn't it? Germs, you get some disease, heavy disease. Mosquito bite, there's so many diseases from mosquito bite. Malaria, horrible disease. Nasty. Carried by the mosquito. So the adhibhautik, adhidaivik klesh, it means we suffer from heat, cold, too much rain, not enough rain, earthquakes, tsunami, so many ways natural disturbances. So there's an intelligent person thinks that everything I do is for the sake of happiness. But despite all the best endeavors I have, and not only me, but everyone else, everyone has to suffer in this material world. Why? Now, if we ask this question, we can answer it in various ways. One way of answering it, Sigmund Freud, he analyzed that all of our problems come because of sexual inhibitions. Wrong analysis. The conclusion of that is that we should all give up our sexual inhibitions and have more sex, and don't worry about it, then you'll be happy. But it's not true. Modern society, in the Western world, this free sex has been promoted largely based on Freud's theories, but it hasn't brought about happiness in society. Western society has got more problems than any society in known history. And India is copying that now. And surprise, surprise, all of a sudden, Indian people have so many psychological and social problems. So many students committing suicide and suffering depression and schizophrenia. It didn't used to be like that. It all comes from aping, the wrongly motivated, highly materialistic civilization, which is based on free sex. Apart from all the mental and social problems it causes with breakdown of the family and so many problems, there are also AIDS, so many venereal diseases. So Freud got it wrong, and the whole world has got it wrong. Sex is not the solution. And there are others who say that it seems absurd. It seems, you see, everyone's working hard and trying to be happy, but no one's happy, then it just seems like absurd and they can't find any meaning in it, and therefore they come to the conclusion that there is no meaning, there is no existence, that everything is simply an illusion. Nothing actually exists. This is the philosophy of Buddhism and Jainism, that nothing actually exists. It's all just an illusion. But then, even then, to explain or to try to help us to understand that nothing actually exists, there is nothing, then they have to make a big, elaborate philosophical structure to explain it. So if there's nothing, then why or how is a philosophical structure there to uphold it? There's a big, big philosophy to explain that there's nothing. And if you don't understand that philosophy, then you got it wrong. But then there's a difference between self-realization and non-self-realization. Well, not self-realization, because there is no self. It's they observe the absurdity, but their proposal that actually there is nothing, that's even more absurd. To say that there is nothing. And then they have a philosophy. And then, if there's nothing, then there's just nothing. You don't, just like, you don't make a mathematical, or you can't make an analysis of nothing, is it? You're going to write a PhD thesis on nothing. You submit it, a big block of paper with nothing written on it whatsoever. This is my PhD thesis. And what do you get from that? Nothing. You don't get a PhD. You have to write something. So how can you make a philosophical abstract to describe nothing? That means that if you make a philosophy, Buddhism, there's philosophy. Jainism, there's philosophy. But you can't say ultimately it describes nothing, because nothing cannot be described except in relation to something. Nothing means the absence of something. And unless there's something, then you can't mentally imagine or make a construct of nothingness. So the philosophical construct is to support the mental concept of nothing. But the mental concept of nothing is something. It's a mental concept. So where's the nothingness? And then you have different schools of Buddhism, and they're all arguing with each other over the nature of nothing. But nothing doesn't have any nature. So it's absurd. It's a philosophical impossibility. And the conclusion is that everything is... Then they come to Zen Buddhism, in which they find the absurdity of trying to explain the absurd. Then they stop trying to explain it, and they're just absurd. That's all. No philosophy, just absurd. That's why in Zen Buddhism, you'll find that one of their most famous sutras is that you should meditate on the sound of one hand clapping. But it's an absurdity, because clapping requires two hands. So it's a meaningless statement. And this is considered very esoteric philosophy, but it's absurdity, and absurdity is meaningless. So ultimately they say there's no meaning. Interestingly, the ethos of modern society comes to the same conclusion. They say that there is no God in control, there is no designer, that everything simply exists without any particular reason. They don't say that, but that's what it comes to. So it comes to absurdity or meaningless. But because by nature we do everything for some purpose, we can say that there is no meaning to life, but we cannot stop at every moment in everything we do acting with some purpose. And even if we say that life is meaningless, we say that with some purpose. If we say that life has no purpose, we do that to try to convince, the purpose of saying that is to try to convince ourselves and others that life has no purpose. So you can't avoid that there is purpose. But Buddhism or the modern non-philosophical, just there was a big bang and then there's Coca-Cola and then they try to avoid any philosophy. But that in itself, even though it's unstated, is a philosophy of meaninglessness. But that the philosophy of meaninglessness doesn't satisfy the soul. You can say, well, I don't believe in any soul. But then who are you not to believe? Who are you? You don't believe that there's no soul, but who are you? And say, well, I'm me. That's me. I'm pointing at the body. But you say it has no ultimate meaning. The body, it's born and it dies, so it has no ultimate meaning. So I'll punch you in the face, and it doesn't make any difference. According to you, it's just a bag of chemicals. Actually, this idea that there is no life beyond a combination of chemicals, they teach like that in the schools, but practically, no one acts like that. Even though they teach that there's no, they don't directly teach that there's no soul, but by teaching that life is simply has come into being as a random combination of chemicals, they're practically there's teaching that there's no soul. But they don't, no one acts like that. The law is not construed in that way. If you go to court and they say that, well, now you shot someone dead, so we're going to hang you. You say, yeah, okay, I shot dead, so what's the problem? You know, it's this bag of chemicals and I put some other chemicals inside it, so what's the problem? Every day they're eating food, it's just some different chemical, I put some other kind of chemical in. And even if you say, you know, I destroyed the functioning of that particular system, but then what's the big thing, you know? If just like this is a jukebox, I could get a hammer and smash that. It doesn't function anymore. I could shoot it. It wouldn't function anymore. But what's the difference between this machine and that machine? If I shoot the jukebox, then you might fine me 500 rupees or something. It seems a pretty stupid thing to do, to shoot a jukebox. What's the purpose? If you shoot a human being, well, it's a bigger machine, so maybe you should fine me 5,000 rupees. But why hang you or give you life imprisonment? You see the point? We don't act like, we give a lot more importance to the living machine, especially to the human being, than to an inorganic machine. But according to the idea that life is simply a random, has come into being due to the random interaction of chemicals, then we shouldn't give any more importance to human beings than to any other machine. But we do. Why? It doesn't make any sense according to that theory. Inherently, we can all understand that there is more to life.
What time are we supposed to finish? Okay.
There is more to the living being than simply some chemicals. Therefore, we are concerned. We think, what is the purpose of life? We don't, on a low level of consciousness, we can be satisfied with eating, sleeping, boozing, effing. We can be satisfied with that. On someone who's on an animal level of consciousness, one who thinks more deeply, they won't be satisfied. They'll think that, well, what's it all about? Why am I here? What is the universe? What is my role in the universe? How does it all come into being? How can I attain real happiness? The fact that we are desiring happiness suggests that our very nature is to be happy. Otherwise, why should we desire? Why should we strive for happiness? Everything that we do for the sake of happiness, either immediate or with the idea of some future gain of happiness. Just like you may study, that doesn't give you immediate happiness, but the idea is that by doing this, I'll have a greater opportunity in future to pass my life in a way that is, it's worth investing the time and energy in this study so that my future situation will be better. So everything we do for the sake of happiness, and an intelligent person sees that there is no real happiness in this material world. And even if you do get a nice wife and a nice house and lots of money and respect and prestige, and you don't have a nervous breakdown and you don't have a heart attack before you're 30 and you don't get AIDS and you don't have high blood pressure and your children don't become prostitutes and, you know, everything's nice. It's not very common, but you know, everything goes nicely, and then you're done. So, even if it is nice, which it isn't mostly, but still you have to die, which isn't fun. Let's go for a school outing. Let's have some fun. Let's go to the geriatric ward and watch all the people dying. It's not fun. No fun in dying. Anyone like to die? No? Someone always puts their hand up, but they don't mean it. We're not allowed to kill you, but we'll, you know, if you really want, we can give you a good thrashing. But, as we learn from the Vedic literatures, we have to die again and again and again. We have to be born again and again and again. So the purpose of life is to find that situation where we can always be happy. The purpose of life is to enjoy, to be happy. If it wasn't, then why should we seek it? In everything we do, we are simply trying to find happiness, but we don't find it. Maybe a little bit, just like when you drink Coke. Okay, there may be some little happiness in it, not as much as they advertise in the advertisement, but something. Especially on a hot day, feeling very thirsty, you drink Coke. The thing about drinking Coke is that by drinking these sweet, soft drinks, the 10 minutes later you feel thirsty again. It doesn't actually slake your thirst. You know what's really good? This is nothing spiritual now. I'm just telling something from the old Indian culture, which your grandparents used to know. What's really good for the hot weather is you get some buttermilk, some charge, and they used to have in their households big container with very thin buttermilk. Just drink that time to time. It'll much better thirst quencher and keep you cool. Much better than Coke or anything else. Better than fridge water. It actually cools the body down. So there you are. There's some grandmother's wisdom. How to keep cool in the summer. So, how to be happy eternally? Happiness doesn't mean simply avoidance of distress, nor does it mean that slight titillation of the senses that comes from sense enjoyment. What is happiness in this material world means that we have some distress and then we get relief from that. And so hot, oh, then I come. And out in the heat, then I come and sit under a fan. Ah, very nice, now I'm happy. And you're all sweating and hot and you come under the fan and you get a cold or you get heat stroke from going quickly from the heat to the cold. You ever experienced that? Very hot day, you come, you drink some ice cold water and then immediately you lose your voice or you get heat stroke. Be careful. Now, people are puggled, it's ridiculous. Previously in India, people had more intelligence. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, anywhere in India, you won't find people running around. They'll be inside, resting. But nowadays, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, in the middle of May, you'll find all the streets in Pune jammed with traffic. It's insane, isn't it? This is progress. People are running around, making some money so that they can have an air condition. The same thing to do is just, you know, just don't run around in the heat. It's ridiculous. People are so stupid. It's just unbelievable. So, what was I saying? Yeah, happiness means to, when we can get relief from some distress, we call that happiness. And on top of that, if we can indulge our senses, we call that happiness. What is happiness in the material world? Having sex. Ah, wonderful. It's not so wonderful. If it was really so wonderful, then look out on the street. Every person aged over 30, pretty much, is married, right? Which means that they're having sex. Everyone looks blissful, ecstatic. Of course, in a progressive city like Pune, then you don't have to get married to have sex. Whatever. You see people are having sex, but they don't look, they're not happy by having the opportunity to have sex because it doesn't bring happiness. It brings maybe some immediate titillation of the senses, but it doesn't bring the happiness. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very nicely analyzed. Shruti Sukh, it means we've heard about it, we think it should make us happy. It's imagined. The imagination that we shall be happy, that's the happiness. But the actual act of sense gratification, whatever it is, riding fast on a motorbike, we imagine it will make us happy, but it brings some titillation of the senses. You can say some brings some euphoria, but it doesn't satisfy the soul. It doesn't bring actual happiness. What we imagine to be happiness by titillation of the senses, that's got nothing to do with actual happiness, which is a much deeper, real, sustained experience. The happiness of sex, finished. Do it, finished. Few seconds. Then afterwards, it's all over. There's nothing there to sustain a sense of happiness. Just you feel a sense of emptiness. That's all. Real happiness is in relationship with the source of all pleasure, who is Krishna. And that happiness comes not from trying to enjoy ourselves, but from trying to please Krishna, who is always happy. That's the science of happiness. There are certain facts about reality. We can't learn all of them from science, because science only deals with what we can observe. And the nature of the soul by nature is supramundane. Science means to study the material world, but the soul by nature is not material. People say, prove that there's a soul, prove that there's God. There is no material means to do so, because by definition, the soul is not material. Therefore, you cannot measure the soul, or you cannot capture God and put him in a cage like a monkey and do some biological studies. So, it's foolishness to consider that we can understand by any material means the soul and God, but there is a spiritual science. There is a different process by which we can understand the soul. It's not exactly a mental process. Beyond the intelligence is the soul. Indriyani parani ahur, indriyega param manaha, manasas tu para buddhe, yo buddhe paratas tu saha. The highly intelligent Vedic seers, actually this is spoken by Krishna, this verse. This is an Upanishadic statement, the rishis, who are the seers. Rishi means mantra drashta. They can perceive the reality in the universe, the subtle reality. They can see things that we don't see by spiritual elevation. So the Vedic mantras say, it's a very intelligent analysis. We can understand this, but it goes beyond intelligence to tell us that mostly people are on the sensual platform. This is the animal platform. How can I enjoy my senses? But beyond the intelligence is the mind. Beyond the mind means thinking how to, that we don't just act, but we consider how to act. There's more, the lower animals, they simply act impulsively. But even the higher animals, they can think a bit about what I should do. You can train monkeys. They have a little more intelligence. But they don't... The intelligence is expressed through their mental activities, how to indulge in the senses. So ultimately they haven't come to the platform of real intelligence. That is the difference between the mind and the intelligence. The mind simply has mental functions, but the intelligence thinks more subtly. Not simply about real intelligence means not simply to think about how to indulge our senses, but to go more subtly and more deep to consider what is the purpose of life. So this Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Indriyani Praniyaha Indriyebhya Paramanaha. The mind, the mental platform is above the sensual platform. And the Manasas Tupara Buddhe. The intelligent platform is above the mental platform. And Yogbuddhe Paratas Tu Saha. And the spiritual platform is beyond even the platform of the intelligence. So if we are to find out that which will actually make us happy and fulfill our purpose of life, the first thing is we have to understand who we are. Because we think I am the body, we think that we shall be happy by indulging the senses of the body, but one who is intelligent sees that simply indulging the senses of the body doesn't make us happy. So then we try to come to the mental or intellectual platform. And we have science, poetry, music, but that doesn't save us from birth and death, and that doesn't fulfill the inner need of the soul. So by the intelligent platform, that is the platform of Vivek, that is, the intelligence is next to the soul. Because by the intelligence we can start to consider that there is something more than the simply what we grossly perceive in this world. Then if we are to get knowledge of the spiritual platform, that's called Atmagyan, then we have to take that knowledge from persons who have transcended the bodily platform. We have to take knowledge from beyond the platform of eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So the purpose of life is to enjoy, but we have to find out how to enjoy in a manner in which there is full enjoyment, which is not restricted by birth, death, old age, disease, or any form of suffering. Real enjoyment should be full and complete at every second, without any cessation, without causing any harm to others. Where is such enjoyment? It should be there. We are hankering for that. The Vedic paradigm is that which tells us how to achieve that. And how do we achieve that? When we stop considering how I will be happy and understand that I am not the center of everything. I am subservient. I am not the controller of the universe. I'm trying to arrange my situation in such a way that I will be happy, but my arrangements are always spoiled. Or even though I make some arrangement, it doesn't bring actual happiness. So we should understand, I am not the controller, I am controlled. So to act according to our situation, I am a subservient, I am a servant, I have to act in a manner that the Supreme Whole, who is the Supreme Happiness, will be pleased. My happiness depends on others. However hard I try, I cannot make a situation in which I will always be happy. So my happiness depends. I am a dependent being. My happiness depends on the happiness of others. Specifically, who is that other? That is the Supreme Lord. Now, there's lots of philosophy. We can go through a lot of philosophy. But if you just want to, if you want to get right to the answer quickly, the answer is Krishna. You can believe it or not believe it, We don't expect you to accept everything all at once. But we would expect that those of you who are intelligent enough to come here to inquire into a higher purpose of life should be intelligent enough to, if you find that in this analysis that I've been presenting for a little over an hour now, if you find that it appeals to your higher intelligence, then you can pursue the matter further. We don't recommend blind faith. Don't take anything blind. And like I was saying, there are many people who are ready to tell you what is the purpose of life, but they themselves have a wrong understanding or an incomplete understanding. Just like I was raised in a Christian, or nominally Christian family, and I was told that we should believe the Bible without question. But then I thought that, well, some people say to believe the Quran without question. And in the Bible, it's presented with some kind of philosophy or some kind. It's presented for human beings, not for animals. So it's the Bible is supposed to appeal to our intelligence at some level, but then we have to turn off our intelligence and just accept it blindly. So I wasn't very satisfied with that. Why should I believe? Just because I happen to be born in a Christian family, why should I believe this? We have intelligence, and that intelligence is meant to find out what is the real purpose of life. We can't understand everything simply by intelligence, but if we come in contact with the highest intelligence that can explain to us in a manner that is satisfying to our intelligence what the ultimate purpose of life is, then if we are actually intelligent, we should be ready to accept that. The one sign of intelligence is to accept that I will be benefited by taking guidance from those who know better than me. We do that all the time. We study in college because we think that the person who's the professor who's guiding me knows better. So we can be benefited if we think that, well, I don't need to study science, I'll just do it by myself. We might, if we take such an attitude, we don't even go to learn 1 + 1 = 2. If we're an ultra genius, we might get as far as Isaac Newton. Even Isaac Newton, he had what he came, his theories, they were based on what he first of all learned. No one's completely self-made. We take knowledge from others in all spheres. So one who is intelligent will be willing to take knowledge from others of the purpose of life. But take knowledge. Don't be cheated. Don't accept something incomplete. Don't be lazy. If we're to understand the purpose of life, we shouldn't accept any tinker who comes along and says, this is the answer. Find people who are self-realized, who know what is the truth, not from their imagination. This is another bogus thing, endemic in modern Hinduism. Someone comes along and speaks a few mantras and talks all nonsense, and foolish people follow them. But an intelligent person should try to understand what is the system for understanding this knowledge. There is a system. If there's a purpose, then there should be a systematic way of finding out that, or of becoming aware of it. There is a systematic system. First of all, we have to see what is the goal. And then there's the systematic process for attaining that goal, which is, to put it briefly, love of Krishna. The purpose of life is to enjoy. That enjoyment comes when our heart is full with pure love for Krishna. There is a process to attain that. Why do we not have that now, if that is the purpose of life? Because our heart is covered by misconceptions about the purpose of life. And therefore we think that the purpose of life is to enjoy forgetting Krishna. Therefore we suffer so much. So the purpose of life is to enjoy. That enjoyment comes when we stop thinking, how will I enjoy? And we simply think how to serve Krishna. To attain that exalted, pure, blissful level of consciousness requires the training, both theoretical and practical, in bhakti yoga. So the purpose of life, if you want to accept it from me, is to enjoy. But don't accept it from me. Why should you accept it from me? But it's not me. If it was just me that was saying, that wouldn't be very meaningful, because anyone can sit on a big seat like this, and if they have enough chutzpah, there's a word in Yiddish which has come into American English, that means gumption, or just, you know, courage, not just, you know, just shamelessness. That's another word you could say, translated as, if you have enough shamelessness, you can just get up on a big seat and talk any nonsense. I'm God. I'm the source of everything. You should all bow down to me. People say like that, either directly or indirectly, and people bow down. They're foolish. So don't just believe me because what I'm saying it. But believe me because what I am saying is on the basis of Shastra, which is the ancient knowledge of the universe and beyond. Because it is accepted by all great self-realized persons. There's a system of checks and balances. Hare Krishna. I'm going to finish there, the lecture, and open up for questions and answers.
Hare Krishna, you also pass on the light as well as the checks when I have to be giving them. For those who want to ask, directly the question would raise hand, the mic will come to them. Else, you can write your questions on the chips and send them ahead. We'll give them the match. Any questions?
Hare Krishna.
We discussed so far.
That's the answer. Sorry, I didn't hear. Could you please say it again?
So we are discussing regarding the purpose of life.
Yeah.
As you say that there is a given purpose of life, and we cannot it should be a purpose of life for everything that we do, right?
No, I said there's a purpose in everything we do.
Yes. But there is something called as a Vishnu Karma Yoga.
Called what? Sorry. Nishkam Karma Yoga.
So I just want some clarification for you, that what is the thing that we say that there is purpose of life and there is Nishkam Karma Yoga. It sounds confusing to me.
Well, there's nothing which is ultimately totally Nishkam. Even if you perform Nishkam activity, you're doing it for a purpose, isn't it? Nishkam means to act in a manner in which you are not trying to fulfill your own personal selfish desire. But still, you're acting then why? For the benefit of others, to perform one's duty. There's still a purpose. The purpose may not be to fill your karma, but there is a purpose. It's not without purpose. Is that all right? Nishkam doesn't mean dishahin. Nishdisha. Doesn't mean directions.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, well, I have a written question here.
Prabhuji, there's a question that you told us about Lord Buddha's philosophy of nothing. But Buddha, the reason is this incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Was Lord Vishnu wrong?
No, Lord Vishnu is not wrong, but he taught that philosophy with a particular purpose. Lord Buddha is accepted as a Shaktyavesh, avatar of Vishnu. Not directly Vishnu, but an empowered person. But yes, the philosophy that he taught was wrong. It was a cheating philosophy that's described by Jaidev Goswami. Nindasi yagya vidher ahaha. Shruti jatam, sadaya hridaya darshita pashughatam, keshava dhrita, buddha sharira jai jagadishaharam. That, because people at that time were misconstruing the purpose of the Vedas, in which animal sacrifices are allowed under restriction, but they were unrestrictedly killing animals. So seeing the situation, Lord Buddha came and said that if the Vedas teach this, then we don't accept the Vedas. So his teaching is not, it's not an eternal teaching, it's not a correct teaching, it is deliberately cheating people to save them from performing even more greatly sinful activities. That is the purpose of Buddha avatar. I have a question here. Is the only way to realize God in the Vedas? The answer to this is yes and no, because there are levels of realization. Obviously, some level of God realization is imparted in the various systems of religion throughout the world that claim to be theistic. But in the Vedas, or even beyond the Vedas, that means the capstone of Vedic knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that gives us knowledge of the Supreme Person who is playing on a flute and dancing with the gopis. So a vague idea of God is given in various religious processes, who he actually is, what he looks like, where he lives, what he likes to eat, who his friends are. Rasagyan, knowledge of God, means interaction with him, which produces ras, prem, bhav. That is given in the shastra. We won't find such an exalted process, a complete process, given elsewhere. So yes, some level of God realization is there in other religious systems, but not very complete. Even yoga proposed by Patanjali does not believe in God, still it is followed for generations. Comment. I don't know, what's the point? There should be some question. I mean, I can make all kinds of comments. One comment is, don't follow Patanjali Yoga, chant Hare Krishna. You can't follow it anyway. Who can follow it? No one, yeah. in the No one in the modern age can follow it anyway. All right, please.
Jai Shri Krishna.
Jai Shri Krishna.
You wrote about being happy. How can you define happiness in this material world? What we have heard is sense gratification or satisfying our senses. But what is true happiness then?
In this material world, that's what I was saying. This material world, the happiness is shrutasukh. It's imagined happiness. Real happiness means when we're in contact with the source of all happiness, who is Krishna. The soul is in his happy state with Krishna. That's the answer. Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama, take shelter of Krishna. As Krishna knows everything about his children, then he should be knowing how much affection and love we have for him. So do we need to give him proof by chanting? I don't understand why we should chant so much. That's because your so-called affection and love is not affection and love at all. You're bluffing. You may be trying to bluff me. You may even bluff yourself, but you're not bluffing. You can't bluff Krishna. If you actually have love for Krishna, then naturally you'll want to chant his name. Oh, I love Krishna so much, but I don't want to chant his name. Why should I chant his name? Naturally, if you love him, you'll chant his name. Just like a man comes home from work and his wife is there. He said, well, do you have anything for me to eat? No, but I love you so much, so why should I bother cooking for you? It doesn't make any sense. I love you. I'm not going to do anything for you. You should know that I love you. What is the meaning of love? It's just talk. Meaningless. Just like human beings have purposes as destined by Krishna, why should an animal have any purpose? Animal is also jiva, but in a situation in which his consciousness is more covered. An animal cannot go beyond any purpose than eating, sleeping, mating and defending. He's far away from the platform in which he can find out the purpose of life. We take animal bodies due to misuse of the human form of life, due to sinful activities. As you said about the Bible, to believe blindly, isn't it true in Krishna consciousness that after a certain level, we have to believe blindly, faith? And if not, blindly is different from faith, then please put some light. Well, there's blind faith and there's reasonable faith. When you go to college, just like I often give this example, mathematics, when we were studying mathematics, we did some algebra, trigonometry, and then one day the teacher on the blackboard put a big squiggle with a line halfway on the right side, with a line on the right, then a couple of brackets, one above and one below. And we didn't know what it was about, and he said, now I'm going to show you about calculus. So we'd heard the word calculus, and we didn't know what's that big squiggle there for. So we didn't know what was calculus, and we saw on the board this thing, didn't know what it meant, but we had faith that there is study of calculus and the teacher knows about it and he understands it and he can impart that knowledge to us. That is faith. We had faith. But it's not blind faith, because it's reasonable to presume that there is the knowledge of calculus and that the teacher can teach us. So blind faith is like, I gave the example, if someone comes and says, folks, I'm God. Open up your purses, give me all your money, and I'll bless you. This is blind faith. There's no grounds to believe. But if you see, there's a We know that there's something, there's an accepted body of knowledge called mathematics, which is accepted by all mathematicians. So that even though I don't understand it, I should be able to understand it, because I know there are many other persons who do understand it, not just now, but in the past. So similarly, if we can have this faith, that parastasmātu bhāvano nyo vyakto vyaktāt sanātana, that beyond this material world, there is a spiritual world, and there are people who have experience of that and who can guide us to that. If we have faith in that, then we can be guided on that path. And there are also books of knowledge, accepted books of knowledge, which help us to understand them. That's not blind faith. That's reasonable faith.
There is a question. As we have been discussing the purpose of life for the evening right now, and you said that we can only see the true purpose of life by transcending ourselves in a spiritual dimension. Which is the way that we discussed, the spiritual intelligence and the spiritual. And you said that we can reach the spiritual dimension only through a guru.
Now, I didn't say that, but it was implied.
Yeah, it was implied. So, if I accept a guru, so what would be the first step towards reaching the further dimension? Because even in dimension, one can reach by himself. But reaching a spiritual dimension is where the problem lies.
Well, the first step is accepting a guru. The first step, just like that example I gave of learning calculus. You may say, obviously you need a teacher. Just if you take a book, you can't learn calculus.
Yes, if I accept you as my teacher, then what will be the first step you suggest to me to reach that dimension, to reach this spiritual dimension, that I can truly realize my purpose?
Well, there is a whole process of bhakti yoga. It's not just one thing. There are several things to do. We have to accept those activities which will help to purify our consciousness so that we become eligible to come to the spiritual dimension. So there are certain do's and don'ts which will help us to purify our consciousness. The do's are: do chant Hare Krishna, do come regularly and hear, because you're not going to learn everything in one session. And also, the hearing in Krishna consciousness is not just a matter of amassing knowledge, but because the discussion is about Krishna, it actually purifies our consciousness. So do accept Krishna prasada. And don't, if we want our consciousness purified, that means purified from lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, and so on, then don't indulge in those activities which will increase that. For instance, watching the TV, reading Cine Blitz, these activities will increase our illusion. So there's a whole program to be accepted. There's a book I made which gives practical guidance on how to execute these activities. It's called A Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. It's available here. It's not a substitute for personal guidance, but it helps. Just like there's no substitute for having a teacher, but it's good to have the textbook also. So the textbook is available here. But you have to come regularly and hear also. I've been told to make the answers quick because there are a lot of questions. So any one of these questions we could spend all night with. Many of the youth, especially the so-called intelligent youth, seem to be trapped. What is this? Spiritual... I can't read. Is it spirituality or spiritually of sexuality? As we are growing up in both ways, being sexual and sensuous, also spiritual young human beings. Both domains sound equipotential. Sexuality and spirituality. How to get out from this? Then come to the spiritual sexual platform. worship Radha and Krishna. That is the original sex. That is not gross. That is not degraded. By understanding that our endeavors to enjoy sex are the perverted reflection of Krishna's sex life, which is free from any vulgarity, that is complete purity. Krishna's attraction for Radha is based on her total love for him. It's a very deep topic and it's very easily misunderstood. All right, one more question and then time's up for this. You gave an example of a person that why to follow him if he says that he is God. Then why do I follow Krishna and chant his name? Even if he gives liberation, it will be after death and I don't remember anything after this life. Then you become an ostrich. You don't remember anything. How do you know? You presume. You already know everything. Why chant? Why accept Krishna as God? Anyone can say they're as God, they are God, but all the highly spirit, all the persons who in their lives demonstrated detachment from the material world and acting on the spiritual platform, they all point to Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and the Shastra points to him also. And Krishna personally came to this world and demonstrated how he is God. That is recorded in the Shastra. Krishna himself speaks in Bhagavad Gita how he is God. That is accepted by all transcendentally advanced persons. So it is very reasonable, even if we don't understand it, to accept that Krishna is God. But if any upstart comes and says, I'm God, why should we accept him? E equals mc squared. You all accept that, right? You accept it, but you don't understand it. But you accept it because a scientist on the highest level that we know in recent generations, he accepts it, and all those who are on that level, which is not very many, but they're on a high level, they accept it also. So it's reasonable for us to accept it. Now, if someone comes and says that, no, E equals, doesn't equal MC squared, E equals MC cubed, why should we accept him? What are your credentials? Well, Einstein can say, I can also say, he's a human being, I'm a human being. But you don't have the same credentials. What he says is based, he has some substance, he has some basis on which to say that, and he provides evidence for it also. You may not be able to understand it, but those who are on that level, they can understand it. So it's reasonable, even if we don't understand it, to accept E equals MC squared. And if some person with no scientific background, or even just some paltry scientific background, comes up and says E equals MC cubed, then if you're a fool, you can accept. But an intelligent person should test and see. Don't be blind. No blind faith.